The Bulgarians and the Byzantine splinter states essentially fought among themselves, and that's one reason why Constantinople was held by the Latins for so long. So in a very, very strange way, the city was a dubious prize, and that struggle to regain control of the city really did influence later perceptions. I mean, the Orthodox always felt that this was our betrayal on the part of the Latins. Constantinople is the queen of cities. We've got to take it back. No Orthodox prince can be legitimate unless they rule in Constantinople, unless there's a Greek-speaking patriarch. And this is what all their efforts are spent. On the other hand, Baldwin and his supporters are desperately fighting to hold on to this city and doing everything in their power, liquidating even more of the assets. I mean, there isn't a relic left, I suspect, worth anything when the city's retaken on August 15th, 1261 by a Byzantine army, or Nicene army. On the other hand, the situation was very different in Greece. The regions of central Greece, Thessaly, Peloponnesus, that is the Morea. Here, various lesser nobles of the Fourth Crusade moved in. Many of them eventually did homage to the Latin emperor in Constantinople. They cooperated closely with Venetians. There were understandings that certain areas were reserved for the Venetians. Other areas were going to go to members of the crusade. Essentially, it was a three-eighths deal. The crusaders had three-eighths of the ex-Byzantine Empire. The Venetians, three-eighths, and the other two-eighths quarter went to the emperor in Constantinople. The most successful was a fellow by the name of William Champlet and his close friend and associate fellow knight, Geoffrey Villehardouin, who is the nephew and namesake of the historian of the Fourth Crusade. These two French barons appeared in southern Greece shortly after the capture of Constantinople and overran most of what we would call today the Peloponnesus, the Morea. In 1205, with the approval of the Latin emperor and with Pope Innocent III, William took the title Prince of Achaia, a very significant title. Achaia is the Roman name for the area. It's actually originally the northern shore of Greece, and it really did conjure up notions of these old Roman notions of provinces and the like. William died without children, and his friend, an associate, Geoffrey Villehardouin, succeeded as prince, and that Villehardouin family ruled in the Peloponnese extremely successfully. There was another adventurer in central Greece, Othon de la Roche, who captured Athens and Thebes, two of the key cities of central Greece, also centers of silk manufacturing. And, of course, Athens is a great historic city. It wasn't a great commercial city in the Middle Ages, but it had a lot of historical associations. And he ruled there as the Grand Duke, Mega Dukes, as he'd be called in Greek. And then there were lesser fiefs that were parceled out by both of these rulers. Well, the Latin rule in Greece actually turned out to be quite successful. And to me, it's always an irony that this didn't become the pattern in the memory of Crusader rule in the former Byzantine Empire, that so much of the fighting that went on over the so-called Latin Empire centered around Constantinople is what really influenced attitudes and opinions in the 13th century and later. Here, the Crusaders who arrived in central and southern Greece really adapted themselves quite successfully the way Crusaders had done in the Levant in the 12th century. In fact, many of these families were French in origin. A lot of them had connections with family in Outremer. Italian investors, particularly Venetians, but eventually others showed up and were quite experienced in exploiting all the commercial advantages. And what they found in Greece was a very sophisticated dry Mediterranean farming, I described in an earlier lecture, plus all of the advantages of running the different monopolies, the silk manufacturing, the silk plantations, the dye industries, glassware, fancy furniture, mosaic shops. All of these quickly taken over and, again, handed out to Frankish vassals as money fiefs, just as we saw in Outremer. Also, the parceling out of administrative posts that would be a salaried official. It becomes, in effect, another way of rewarding vassals. And what you find in the 13th and 14th century, even later, is a very, very successful exploitation of this economic system adapted to the feudal political structure, the same sort of pattern we had seen in Outremer.